This is an NITV radio podcast. For the full program, visit sbs.com.au/NITV radio.
Bladu Nyan Wangat Naranik Mandy, Warangeri Willamik Warangeri Balakut, Nyungodjin Ba Lewik Nugulik Ba Lalal Ba Gugung Nugulik. So my name is Mandy Nicholson and I am from the Wurundjeri mob and I thanked my ancestors and all of my elders in my Woiwurrung language.
So you've really done a lot of work and I think it's important for our audience to understand how much you've put into researching and working with your people around language revival and retention. Do you want to talk about what you do?
Well, I can tell you my journey, my language journey, I suppose. It sort of started when I was 18 years old. I've always been, since I was 18, like I've worked since I was 15, but since I was 18, I've always worked in an Aboriginal organisation in, you know, all different forms. But the first main job that I had was at Galena Beak Living Cultural Centre in Hillsville. And I was, like, initially the front desk person there, and then my roles moved to, you know, shop manager and tour guide and, you know, cultural officer kind of there with some other colleagues. And I came across this book from Barry Blake, and it was a chapter in a book, and it had Woiwurrung in it. And I thought, I've always been interested in language because I didn't grow up learning my language. Like, you know, a few of us know a few little words here and there, like, you know, muna or mum or things like that. But I always wanted to learn more, and I found this chapter and I just instantly photocopied it and I tried to pronounce the words in there. And looking back now, I completely did it completely wrong. But from there, language has always been a part of my life. I went and did a whole lot of different things. Like I had two daughters. I went to university, did an archaeology degree. But as soon as I finished my archaeology degree, there was a job that came up at the Victorian Aboriginal Corporation for Languages, VACL. And I took it and I went to get that job and I got it. And from that moment, it's opened my eyes to all the possibilities, the cultural knowledge that's embedded in language. It's just completed that void that I've had in my life. And it's really helped me understand the structure of my language and Aboriginal languages in general. It's also helped me create a lot of songs and it's helped us, you know, create ceremonies that have real guts to them. And especially when with our little dance group, Giri Giri Dance Group, it's enabled us to create dances that match up to the songs. We've created a brand new song now for the Giri Giri, the Willy Wagtail, and it's just full of, you know, the cultural connections of this spiritual bird. So it's a long journey, but since I've been 18, I've never gone away, I've never drifted away from the language side of things because I think language and culture are the same thing. Without one, there's not the other, you know, like a tree. Culture is the tree and language is the roots. If you chop the roots off, then, you know, culture dies. It's formed a major part of my Aboriginal identity.
To hear you speak so fluently, it's really lovely. And I guess learning more about language also is around connection to country. And do you want to talk a bit about, I guess, the importance of having that connection and talking on country and being in country to be able to be part of the environment with language?
Well, I think living in the city is a major problem in terms of, you know, people describing Aboriginal culture, especially in Victoria and Melbourne. So what I'm currently studying in my PhD is about how do you connect to country when you don't live on country. So I associate living in the city as almost being off country because all of your, you know, physical material culture, you can't see it anymore because there's buildings all built over it. So what I try to get out there and what I'm currently writing about is how we don't just look at a city. We look, say, recently I was up in the top of one of the skyscrapers and I was looking down at the city and I was telling this group of people, like, I don't look at all the buildings or the car parks or all the people in there. I look what used to be there or what's underneath that, because when you're connected to country, you're looking what's beneath the ground, what's on the ground, what's just above you, what's in the sky, and then what's often forgotten is the cosmos. So there's all these varying levels that all have language underpinning them. So, you know, like a story about our creation of the Emu sisters in the Pleiades, for example, you know, like a lot of the stuff related to that, you can, like, really understand it more by, you know, researching the language words that are embedded in those stories. Like with the fire sticks, for example, before the women, the Emu women went up into the sky as the stars, the name for the digging stick is Wulunya. And it also means, you know, the hot fire, the embers on the you know, ash and embers and charcoal. And it's like, whoa, so you can see the connection there. So I just think it's amazing, and I'll always keep learning all of these different hidden treasures that you find through researching revival languages, because there's no fluent speakers, unfortunately, like I'm speaking English now, of any of the languages in Victoria. So we're trying really hard to change that.
Yeah, and so what about bringing in language through schools? Because I've heard that Woiwurrung language is actually being implemented in the curriculum here. Is that right?
Well, when I first started at VACL about 6 years ago, Thornbury Primary School started up a Woiwurrung language program that was running really successfully. We had like a linguist, a LOAT teacher, me and an Aboriginal educator there. And we all worked together. We met every Monday and we created all these resources, and it was really, really going really well. And the kids were teaching their parents at home, or when they were walking along the footpath, they would name an animal in language and things. And then unfortunately, you know, the Aboriginal educator left. So there was another Aboriginal educator there that took over that role, but there's no new language being taught because we created such a mass amount of resources that they can reuse those for the different year levels. And that was the only school that I can think of off the top of my head that is doing a Woiwurrung language program. I know that Hillsville High was for a short time. I know that Warrawa College were doing Yorta Yorta, and there's a Swan Hill Primary is doing a language program. I'm not sure if it's still active up there with only Steph Charles. And then you've got Brendan Kennedy doing a heap up in Robinvale. And then you've got Joel Wright down in the Gunditjmara area doing a few workshops and programs at the high schools down in the Warrnambool area. So it's sort of dotted throughout, and I know that there's little bits and pieces happening in Gippsland as well with Gunai.
You're with NITV Radio.
Yeah, and a big part of what you do with your family is also bringing back ceremony and language and song. Can you just share a bit about that? Because I've been to one of your ceremonies. So what would you like to share about that as far as bringing that back into your family and the importance of it?
Well, the ceremony that I found, like me and my brother are very similar. We kind of, as soon as we hit young adulthood, we decided to pursue everything that we could to do with our culture. And what I did was I researched as much as I can. I still do research here and there. So 20 odd years of research, I've come across a written ceremony. Like it's a ceremony, but it's written step by step. And I'm like, oh my God, I found gold here. So other people kind of know about it, but me and a couple of aunties, Auntie Di Kerr and Auntie Irene Morris, have rekindled this ceremony, and it's called the Murum Turukruk ceremony. And Murum or Murum means body, Turul means reeds. So Turak is named after reedy swamps. So there's another way you can find language embedded in the environment, through place names. And Gruk is the word ending for female. So it was amazing. 2 years ago, well, 3 years ago now, we did our first coming of age ceremony since European arrival, and we had about 20 young girls come in and do that ceremony. We had a couple that their mums had contacted us and said, you know, can my daughters and my niece be part of this, because we don't have anything like this up here. So we said, yes, come along. And it was amazing. We taught the girls how to collect bush foods in the bush there at Nyoka Bush Camp. We showed them how to, you know, the sap on a tree that you could chew that, and it's used to stick implements together. We taught them how to collect the reeds for their necklaces and how to actually make the necklaces. And then we taught them how to make a possum skin belt as a symbol of them going through that ceremony. And we put ash on their bodies, like on their foreheads, to represent that they're connected to that ceremonial fire and they're connected to the earth. But we also said to them, if you muck up, this belt will be taken off you, and you have to earn it back. So there's been a couple that have had their belts taken away, but a couple at times have earned it back, and sometimes maybe, you know, something's happened again. So it's just a learning thing for them, to teach them the roles and responsibilities of being, you know, a responsible, humble, honest, staunch young Aboriginal woman. So we're hoping to do that again this year in November. So, yeah, it's a really amazing thing. It just really teaches young girls a lot of leadership roles and responsibilities, and they know the rules. So it really grounds them, because living in a society now in the city and anywhere, really, you know, things like Facebook and the internet can be very, you know, it can undo really firm foundations. But if you've got those firm cultural foundations, you can always come and lean on them again. So that really completes who these young women are, because it's such a hard thing to do these days.
Yeah, and it's interesting, because growing up without culture, you definitely have a lot more pressures, although there is pressure with responsibility, cultural responsibility, but it definitely gives you a better headspace than the other pressures that we concern ourselves with, which really aren't really that important, are they?
Well, I don't want these young girls that I have responsibility for, because traditionally aunties were responsible to help raise the young girls. I don't want any of them to grow up saying, well, I don't know my language, I don't know my culture, I don't know any of our dances. I don't want that to happen to them like it happened to me. So I'm really trying to get it out there that, you know, it doesn't have to be that way anymore. We can live in the two worlds. We can always, fall back onto that cultural grounding.
What about the elders in your community who weren't able to learn language? Are you finding people are coming to you now and asking for support for that?
There are a few aunties that ask me. In modern times, a lot of people like language names for their buildings or their programs and things. So at times there are some aunties that will ask me for specific advice, because with my language knowledge, instead of having a dictionary in front of me and just saying one word at a time, you can't really learn a language that way. So what I've developed is I've linked it all to the grammar system, because all linguistic books that we've got are written for linguists. So community have no idea what it says. Even myself, I don't have any idea. But when I was at VACL, we had our community linguist there, Chris Ira, and she showed me how to read it and understand all the terminology. So what I've done is I can translate anything now. I can translate songs, poems, stories in full language with full grammar. So it can be very difficult to, you know, translate a modern word into an ancient language, but you create new language words. I'm trying to think of one off the top of my head. You know, there wouldn't be a word for computer or car or anything like that. So you've got to come up with words that are the closest. Oh, yeah, I have got an example. In my little acknowledgement at the start, I said my lalalpa gugul nugulik, which means my many grandfathers and many grandmothers. That's my way of translating the word for elder, because we haven't got a specific word for elder, but I believe that that is a really good description of an elder, you know, in many grandparents.
Yeah, you've done a really big job, and so obviously you've got a big responsibility yourself.
And I think another problem that comes up, and it's the colonialism, you know, the colonial language that's used, you know, Aboriginal people used to live here or they used to do that. And something that's sort of tagged along with all of that is the use of English. We're using English, I suppose, accent when we're speaking in language these days. So slowly that's turning. Like Wurundjeri is a very English way of saying my mob's name. It should be Wurundjeri. Yeah, so, you know, you've got to start saying the words back the old way it used to sound. And the way to do that, the key to doing that, is you look up the letter, the sound system for all the vowels, and you always keep that sound consistent with what's there. So you don't say it, like an example would be the word for kangaroo is spelled M-A-R-R-A-M. So a lot of people not knowing, they're reading it in an English way, would say marum. But the A sound in my language, and a lot of Aboriginal languages, is an A, like, you know, in the word but. So it would be marum. So we're trying to slowly flip that around and start using our language words in a, you know, the old way of speaking the language.
This was an NITV radio podcast. For more, visit sbs.com.au/NITV radio or download the SBS radio app.